What is up, everybody? My name is John Sparks. I am your host for Sparks of the Paranormal. And I want to say a huge thank you to everybody out there that's been showing love and support on the Instagram, the Facebook page, all the podcasting platforms. You guys freaking rock, man. Seriously, thank you so much. And I think we're all really enjoying this journey together as we learn more about UFOs, cryptids, spirits, ghosts, demons, everything that goes bump in the night. And if you guys want to support the show, guess what? I just dropped merch. That's right. If you go to the Instagram page or you go to the Facebook page, you'll find a link there. It's going to get you some sweet, sweet paranormal swag. Maybe some dope hats, some wicked sweet t-shirts, maybe even a bandana for your paranormal pup. That's right. Grab a bandana, slap it on that pup. I want to see a picture on Instagram. With that being said, grab a seat, kids. Get ready, because it's about to get crazy on a brand new episode of Sparks of the Paranormal.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to Sparks of the Paranormal. I am your host, John Sparks, and I want to say a huge, huge thank you to everybody that listened to our last episode with angel medium Dr. Michael Terzi. It was another one of those episodes where somehow in the middle of it, I have 3 million questions, and we only have like 50 minutes to get all of them answered, so I only got in 3. But today, we are talking cryptids. I know. I'm so excited. So this guy is a biblical paranormal researcher and cryptid researcher. He's been doing it most of his life. He is from Texas, and he just came out with a book called Metroplex Monsters, Dallas Demons, Fort Worth Ghostmen, and Other Terrors of the Trinity River. Not only is that a mouthful, but it sounds amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason McClain. Jason, how you doing?
So far, so good. John, how you doing, man?
I'm making it day by day, brother. I'm making it day by day. That's kind of how I run.
I think that's how we're all doing right now. So,
yeah, exactly.
So you're in good company as far as I can tell.
So let's dig into the meat of it real quick. So how did you get started down this path? Was it like experience? Was it obsession? Was it skepticism? How did all of it get started?
I'm gonna be honest, probably all of the above. Mm-hmm. So two key elements first, and then we'll address the third. Mm-hmm. The first one, I'm a geek, always have been. My father was a mechanic, but he's one of those guys who that's what he loved. He loved tearing things apart, putting them back together. Yeah. And I'm still, I'm just turned 40. I'm still just now understanding how much that impacted my life. Grew up as a mechanic with him. Please don't ask me to fix anything. I'm terrible at it. That's why I do title work. I love doing it, but I am terrible. But the practicality, taking things apart, putting them back together, he always said I could believe whatever I wanted to believe, but I had to be able to prove it to him. Mm-hmm. People would look at me as like, what do you mean you're a skeptic? You're a biblical paranormal researcher. I don't believe anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to really tear it apart, put it back together. I want to prove it right or wrong, which is why I have a Bible study channel. I call it Not Another Bible Study, because we're going to talk about things people don't want to talk about.
Yeah,
we're going to tear it apart. We're going to put it back together and really see what fits, what doesn't. And I just don't believe anything. I have to take it apart. But by the time I'm done, yeah, you're not going to get me off that belief because I'm going to argue your position better than you can argue yours, and then put it back together. And I know where I'm coming from, but I'm always open to something. So it's that skepticism, right? Yeah. The second part is, again, my father was a young earth creationist. I was a young earth creationist. And I grew up going to the Creation Evidence Museum that Dr. Baugh runs still to this day. I've actually seen and handled the materials for the London Hammer. In fact, there's some stuff that will be coming out later or early next year that I can't really talk too much about, but I get a chance to really look at the research behind it, the actual x-rays that show what it's made out of. I've spoken with metallurgists about how it was made. So I've gone through these things, and it's like, okay, this some version of young earth creationism. I think there's a lot of leeway with that, right? As far as the models that you want to play with. But that model is far, you know, in broad terms, is the only really workable model when you look at what we actually see.
Yeah.
Right? So those two things kind of, you know, I love archaeology, you know, it spun into my love of archaeology, my love of cryptozoology. I didn't even know it was called cryptozoology at the time. It wasn't until much, much later that I learned about that. But, you know, living dinosaurs, things like that, these were all things that were in my mind. Obviously, UFOs, it's like, you got to investigate that because...
Of course.
It's like, it's there, it's the big thing, you know, you got to learn to address it. So, all of this was sort of in my wheelhouse already up until... A few years ago, I decided to take the big leap and say, you know, while there are some very good Christians out there doing the work,
yeah,
it's very, very far and few between. And oftentimes they try to not hide per se, right? That's the wrong word, but they don't wear it on their sleeve. You know, they want to be seen as the researcher first. I'm like, you know what? Why not be seen as the guy saying, no, 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 there, you know, the Christian worldview has an argument for all of this.
Yeah,
and it fits. It's like, why not be the guy that stands out and says, nope, you want to talk about it? Come to me.
Yeah.
So that's what I did about 2 years ago, really kind of doing this more, you know, more professionally, more full time. But the third element as to why I'm doing all this is when I was 12. And if you had asked me even 3, 4, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have said this was the reason. But again, a lot of things are only true in retrospect, right?
Yeah.
Hold on. Actually, I really started doing this more wholeheartedly about 5 years ago. Man, I'm getting old. I just realized. I just realized what year it was. Like, wait, no. Hold on. About 5 years ago. Anyway. So, but really, honestly, if you asked me even like 2, 3 years ago, I would have told you something else. But something that's really that happened to me when I was 11 or 12, that really sort of. Ran home everything for me and has really shaped the trajectory of my life was, and I talk about it in the book, my encounter with a living pterosaur in Dallas, Texas. Actually, DeSoto, that's where I grew up. It's literally a suburb. Our northern border is the southern border of Dallas, right?
Okay. Yeah.
We're right off of 35. It's a normal little suburb of Dallas.
Yeah.
Nothing weird about it. But we were in a creek. It's called the 10 Mile Creek. By the way, just a little off topic. Texans are terrible at naming things. I love Texas. I love everything about Texas. But man, we are terrible at naming things. Like, why do we call it the 10 Mile Creek? Because it runs for 10 miles. That's how, like, Round Rock, Texas. Why is it called Round Rock, Texas? Because there's a river, and there was a big round rock. And that was where you crossed, because if you could see the rock, you knew it was safe to cross. That's why it's like,
sweet Lord.
Like, why do we call it Lake Texoma? Because it's the lake in between Texas and Oklahoma. Like, come on, guys.
Oh, we have one of those here in North Carolina. It's called 10 Mile Road. So, yeah. I get it. It's great.
Yeah.
And then there was, what is it, Falling Rock Gorge.
Right.
Because it's a gorge where there are
falling rocks. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm like, we are terrible at naming things. Like, I don't care where you go. About now, the best named thing in the entire state of Texas is Gun Barrel City.
Oh, it's good. That's good.
Yeah, no, I love driving through Gun Barrel City. It takes exactly 30 seconds, and you love every minute of it. But so anyway, I'm in 10 Mile Creek. We're fishing, and my friend, you know, we were packing up. He's already up the hill, and I'm just inside the tree line when I hear this noise. It sounds like the call, like a bird call, but the best thing I can describe is like a very loud, ugly crow. It's the best way I can say it. It's like I did not recognize it at all. I had spent my entire youth growing up in that creek. I know everything. So I'm like, that's weird. And so I poke my head out from behind the tree line. And at first, I think I'm looking at the biggest blue heron I've ever seen in my life. But definitely 8 to 10 foot wingspan. I mean, maybe even a little bit larger, but definitely between 8 to 10 feet. And at first, I'm like, man, that's the biggest blue heron I've ever seen. And then it gets right in front of my face. Because essentially, think of this creek, it has like a straightaway. And I'm in the middle of the straightaway.
Yeah.
That's the best way to think about it, right? it's only flying like 10, 15 feet off the deck. Well, because of where I'm at, it's basically right there at my eye line. Yeah. So it's flying straight. It doesn't care about me, but it gets literally the right, its right wing tip is literally 5 feet from my face.
Mm.
And I look at it, I realize there's no feathers on this thing.
Oh, and wow.
You know, when a heron flies, it does that S-curve thing with the neck, right?
Yeah.
That's what it was doing, so that's why I thought it was the same thing. And its overall body shape looked like a heron. And you know, when they fly, they often will have their legs sticking straight out back, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought I was looking at. But again, no feathers. And that's when I realized it wasn't... I saw the feet. Then I saw what is actually a tail with a flange on the end. Big sort of, you know, diamond-shaped flange.
Yeah.
I'm like, not the feet. And so now that I have a better idea of what I'm looking at, I'm watching it as it goes by. And then it banks and turns the corner. And that's when the friend comes back. He's like, hey, you coming or what?
Of course, like, right after.
Yeah, exactly. Like, did you just see the pterosaur that flew by? And he's like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. And he just ignores it. And at that point, I'm like, I can't really talk to him. And what's worse is, like, even my father, who would have supported me in all this, I couldn't tell him. Because I'm like, this is crazy. I couldn't have possibly seen what I saw because of where I'm at. Like, and even though later on, I mean, even like just a few years later, I found out that there were living, you know, reports of living pterosaurs in the Rio Grande Valley and in California and out in Arizona, New Mexico area, people will see them every once in a while. I'm like, okay, but that's not what this is. Like, I'm in South Dallas. Straight up, like this. There's no way they live here. But a few years ago, I learned very differently, and now I catalog them. And the thing is, what really surprised me was I didn't have to ask very hard before I found a bunch of people saying the same thing about where I live. In fact, a gentleman who I will say, let me rephrase it this way. As soon as I came out about my encounter, two people that I knew from my church said, oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Whoa, okay.
I'm sorry, you've seen what now? And then it didn't take very long of just asking people when I was doing research for the book. I would just randomly ask people, just people out everywhere.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything weird?
And that's asked, a great question.
Like, so everybody... This is my advice to everyone. If you're interested in this stuff, like, here's the biggest problem. We don't talk about these things anymore. That's the biggest issue. I don't care what you know, the biggest issue here is that we don't talk about it. You'd be surprised if you, when you introduce yourself as I'm a biblical paranormal researcher. Here's my card. Have you seen anything weird? And they said, well, what do you mean by weird? I'm like, not necessarily ghosts or anything, but I'm working on a book. And have you seen something like a Bigfoot or a living pterosaur and then there or whatever? And they, and oftentimes people be like, well, now that you mention it, it happened a couple of years ago. And the thing is, you don't give them details. That's the clue, right? That's sort of the... Now, like with Bigfoot, pop culture is so filled with it, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
Right?
It's almost like a cartoon character at that point.
Right. Exactly. So everyone kind of knows what you're talking about. And so every once in a while, you're like, okay, is this a real thing? So I do definitely have accounts in the book of Bigfoot in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In fact, it's a big, big thing about it. And there's some really interesting stuff. If you're into Bigfoot, I think some of the most important, and I mean this with all sincerity and all humility, I think some of the things I've talked about as far as, and we can talk about this later on, but connecting, Bigfoot to the myth and how the lore all worked, like that may be something that a lot of people need to read if you're into Bigfoot, because I do something with it, and I dissect it in ways that people aren't necessarily used to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that we really need to examine if we want to really grow, not just the community, but actually get answers.
Yeah.
So, like with the pterosaurs, there's just not a lot of conversation about those.
No. You
know? So when people are talking to me, it was amazing how often they all said the exact same thing. I thought it looked like a heron. I thought it looked like a pelican, or I thought it looked like a crane, or I thought it looked like... The only reason owl would came up on one was because she was driving at night.
Yeah.
Right, so everyone thinks
interesting.
It's big. It's a bird-like creature. It must be an owl, right? So it's one of those things where, but everyone else to the, I mean, literally all of them said at first I thought it looked like a fill in the blank here, heron, crane, pelican. They're all basically the same.
Yeah.
You know,
large bird.
Large bird, but they're all large birds that do that S-curve thing with their neck, right? Yeah. Where the back of their head is basically sitting on their shoulders. And they all have the same sort of body style, right?
Yeah.
As far as the shape of their wings. Now, that to me tells me everyone, it's like that's a pattern right there. Because it's the same pattern I had. I didn't think I was looking at a pterosaur at first. It's like you think you're looking at this, and then you get a closer look. That's when you realize, whoa, this is not what I thought I was seeing at first. And I will say this, after I wrote the book and sent everything off to the publisher, I got another account from someone I will just say is known very, very closely to me and well to me. It freaked him out. And he saw it less than a mile from where I had my sighting. And there's an account in the book that's only like 2.5 miles, maybe 3 miles from where I had my sighting.
Wow.
So they're still active in this area, and I've got, again, all kinds of accounts out of southern Oklahoma and north Texas, and it's one of those things where they're here, you know, and I think the reason they are far less known is, A, while everyone's okay talking about Bigfoot, no one's comfortable talking about this.
Yeah.
Right? But two, I think most people just don't ever see them. As we can tell, these they are nocturnal, right?
Yeah.
I would argue that they are probably have a critically endangered level population size.
Yeah.
And so you're just not going to see them. Also, the reptiles, right? So they don't have to be out and about as often as even though they fly, which does take a lot of calories. They seem to glide more than anything else. So, but even because they're reptiles, they're not going to be using as many calories as, say, a bird does, right?
Exactly.
So they're going to be out less often than say, a standard bird. And then the last element, I think the biggest single element to this is they look like cranes. Unless you really pay attention to them, you're just going to assume it's a crane because you're driving at 75 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Or to go to work, or you're dropping off the kids at school. You're not going to stop and look at it. And these things seem to be kind of low to the ground. So it doesn't seem like, it seems like they very much are almost, our entire society is set up to not see them. Right. And this is, and one of the big things I talk about in the book is a theory called the green wall.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, everyone's like, well, how can you have Bigfoot running around so close to the Dallas-Fort Worth area? Well, the simple answer to that is, look at how we live our lives. We don't have everything paved over.
No. Right?
What we do is we live on these little paved islands that have these little concrete bridges that connect us to where we're going. We don't ever do that. And really, even here in Texas, I know people think all of Texas looks like a desert. I assure you it doesn't. I mean, we're basically on the bottom end of America's Great Plains, so it's largely flat. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Except for a few places here and there. You start going south, you do get more hills. But the thing is, all of North Texas is sitting on a limestone slab, right?
Mm.
All of it. The only reason life is even possible here is because of our creeks and the Trinity River and the Brazos River. But largely the Trinity. And everything connects to it. Well, everything around the river and the creeks, that's where all the good soil is. That's where all the trees are. Well, it floods every year. So we're not going to build directly on it. So we have monumental green spaces that are just thick green wildlife. And you could like disappear into them and be like, you're not in a city. But straight through the heart of downtown. The city of Irving has a problem with feral hogs. And if you were to be in Irving, you wouldn't know that Irving, like if you're not from the area, you would have a hard time knowing when downtown Dallas is and Irving is.
Because Irving
is very much just a continuation of that concrete sprawl. And yet, Texas Parks and Wildlife estimates there's over 1,000 feral hogs. in Irving. Nobody ever sees them. And please understand, these are not piglets. These are very large, very dangerous wild animals.
And they're just a side note, they're in, they're saying that by 2025, every major city will have a feral hog problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just an, and we don't see them. I lived in Florida. I lived in St. Augustine, which was known for feral wild hogs. I was there for 6 months and never saw one.
I can count. I have never seen a feral hog in Dallas County.
Yeah.
I've basically lived in Dallas County most of my life. The only time, and I even lived in, when I was in, and lived in Nacogdoches for a while, I was doing college and I stayed for my wife to finish up her degree. Again, Nacogdoches, Texas, this is deep East Texas. Never once saw a feral hog out there. Every time I've seen a feral hog, it was at night driving back from something else, like a conference or whatever. That's the only time I've ever seen a feral hog just running around, right? These things disappear. And they're quite large. I mean, imagine the biggest dog you've ever seen. That's an average sized feral hog, right? And these things are vicious. They are not cute, cuddly little critters. They will kill you given the opportunity. But the point is, you could have 1,000 of these, and that's a low end estimate. Some have thought there's even more, but you could have 1,000 of these things in a city that's basically just nothing but urban sprawl. And no one ever sees them. They see the destruction they leave, but no one ever actually sees them.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is, again, we live in these little concrete islands. And going back to the idea of the green wall, around every creek, around every drainage ditch, and off of every road, what do? We create, not only do we have these designated green spaces, we mow right up to this artificial tree line that we've created, this nice crisp tree line. Well, what does that do? It means right where the tree line begins, you have all the scrub brushes grow up, right?
Yep.
And tall grass grows right there because it's still got all the sunlight. The trees haven't blocked that out. And so what that means is you can't see into it. There are places, I mean, virtually every creek, you can't see into it unless you're crossing over a bridge.
Yeah.
I have several photographs where it's like, here is here's the 10 mile creek, and you can clearly see I'm standing on a bridge, and you can see the green wall on either side. Like, it's just a solid green space around it. But if you were trying to look into it from the road, I go just 100 feet the other side, you can't see 2 feet into it. You could march an entire elephant through these, you could march elephants through these creeks, you'd never see them.
It's crazy.
And that's where these creatures are living. They're basically, we have literally created an environment where anything can hide.
A perfect habitat.
It's a perfect habitat because we don't ever go into it.
Wow.
That's just it. It's like, it was like, what about our nature trails? You mean the perfectly paved nature trail that we manicure?
Exactly. Because, let's go back to the commercialized Bigfoot that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Where I live in the state of North Carolina, there are over 350 waterfalls, and most of them have very highly trafficked paths. But most of them with the highly trafficked paths also have a ton of Bigfoot activity.
Yeah.
A ton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just Bigfoot. Let's think about everything else that's out there. Everything that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy because as you were talking about the pterosaur and what it looks like, I think about the sketches of the Jersey Devil up in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey.
Thank you. Yes. No, you're singing my song right there.
Uh-huh. Because... Uh-huh. Even though they're like, oh, it's got the head of a horse and all this kind of stuff. Okay, well, it's also at night that this thing is seen. So there's a ton of features that are being misinterpreted. From what it sounds like, this thing may be just a pterosaur that happens to live in the Pine Barrens, which is a literally barren area of pines.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. That's immediate. Like, as you're explaining everything, what this thing looks like, and that's immediately where my brain went. And I was like, my God, that could literally, the Jersey Devil could be a pterosaur.
So let me actually completely validate everything you just said by going back to why we think it looks like the way it does. All right. By the way, I just noticed on the, because I know we have the video up, I think we have the same mic setup.
It looks like it. It looks like it.
But yeah, no. So let me help you out here. This whole idea, this whole image that we have of the Jersey Devil, of having this head of a deer and legs of a goat and this long serpentine flange tail, you know, the devil's tail and bat wing, all of this imagery that you think of as the Jersey Devil,
yeah,
comes from a singular incident that occurred in the late 1800s.
Yes.
The Jersey Devil was seen in broad daylight by a bunch of people. Their accounts went to a paper in Philadelphia. An artist in Philadelphia who worked for a newspaper drew it up. Now, here's the key element here. He didn't take it seriously, and all he did was take, and this is, as an artist, one of my big things is artwork through the, is actually researching the artwork of different cultures. That's in my misspent youth, I will say this, I did study, I actually went to school partially for archaeology, and that was actually one of the things I wanted to do was actually be the artist in the room looking at the artwork of these cultures saying, hey, hold up, because I think there's a lot of things that are misinterpreted. A lot of people talk about artwork who've never done art. They don't know what it takes to make art. And so there, you'll even find art historians who are like, I'm sorry, you've never picked up a paintbrush. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll read people saying, oh, well, you know, Leonardo da Vinci. This sounds completely unrelated. It is. Just give me a second. But they'll be like, oh, Leonardo da Vinci didn't even need a straight ruler to do his paint. I'm like, have you tried painting in oil with a sable brush and paint a straight line without using a straight bar? You're
literally
insane.
Impossible.
It's literally impossible. It's like, just I'm all for this man being a genius, but he used a straight edge. Just please stop saying stupid things. Anyway, but my point being, so I went, you know, archaeology and art history and printmaking were basically, that's what I was doing. That's what I was studying. Fine art and art history as well as archaeology. So I do a lot of this reconstruction of artwork. And the thing I've noticed when it comes to dragons, the idea of forensic reconstruction through artwork is a new concept, yeah, right? If you actually look at what's happening, when people describe things to you, memory is basically emotion, and they're equating it to something they actually know. People 100 years ago, you know, 140 years ago now, they didn't know about dinosaurs. Like, it wasn't common knowledge. They wouldn't have said this looks like a pterosaur. They said it had bat-like wings. Well, does it mean that they were bat wings? Or were they saying it was membranous instead of feathered? It had a head that looked like a deer. Okay, it doesn't mean it was a deer's head. It just means it didn't look like a bird's head. It had that overall shape to it. It had a bifurcated tail. Well, that's Satan's tail, and I actually think it comes from pterosaurs from the Middle Ages, but we'll put that on the side. The point is, it's a long flanged tail that has a triangular flange on it. This is what the people described. Well, he took it all literally, he didn't take it seriously, and gave us what we think of the Jersey Devil. But just re-examine what people actually said that they actually saw.
Exactly.
And realize what they're saying. They're telling you that they saw a pterosaur, because that is exactly what they were describing. You know, these are not trained witnesses. They're just trying to convey the things that were weird about it. That's what they were describing, was a pterosaur, a modern day witness to it. Again, at night, they saw it. They said it had a bluish gray skin. The one I saw had bluish gray skin. That's why I thought it was a blue heron at first.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people see them as having smaller crests, which most Ramphractoids didn't. Or being reddish brown. Well, that's easily explained away through sexual dimorphism, right? The females are dull and gray. The males probably have a minor crest for display, and they're probably reddish brown.
Yeah.
This is, of course, assuming they can't just change color like a chameleon. We don't know if they could, or if they can or can't. there's some reason to believe that some of them may even have been, or may be, rather, phosphorescent or bioluminescent.
Intriguing.
There's a lot of theory about, sort of these ghost lights being pterosaurs. Well, again, they do seem to correlate as far as location, and the Ropan out in Papua New Guinea is believed to be another pterosaur, and it's also believed to bioluminesce. So we have to at least say we can't take that option off the table. Now, have anyone directly witnessed it? No. Do I think that's what it is? I can't say it's not. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have the evidence for or against. But it's a theory that's on the table. But the point is, throughout history, people, they would see these very rare creatures called dragons, and they would describe them to artists, and or probably to their friends. Their friends would describe them to artists using things that they saw, right?
Yeah.
And so, but the artists, they're not necessarily trained to think how to deconstruct this and put it back together the right way. They're just doing it literally. Well, a great example of this is something like the Cockatrix, right?
Yes.
Just the description of this thing is utterly ridiculous. It's a dragon that has the upper body of a chicken, right?
Doesn't make sense.
Preposterous. Until you ask yourself, well, hold up. We've only now discovered that theropods had feathers. And this is like within the last 30 years kind of a thing.
Mm.
Well, how would you describe something like an oviraptor, which is a dinosaur that had a beak and had a head crest, and now we know had feathers? How do you describe that if you lived 3,000 years ago in Persia?
That's intriguing.
Or imagine something like a velociraptor or a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Again, what are they? Or a gallimimus? What do they have? They have three-toed tracks. They would have looked, and if we realized they probably weren't all covered in feathers like a regular bird is. They probably just had feathers on the top, maybe on their arms a little bit. It would look like a dragon.
That's part chicken.
Yeah,
that's crazy. You're blowing my mind right now.
So the point is, that's the thing. People, historically, they've not. We have all these things out there, and they're not really being drawn the same way or written or recreated the way that they should have been, because the artists weren't trained to think that way. And sometimes they weren't, a lot of these accounts aren't taken seriously. So popular culture gives us one thing, the reality is the other. And so no one talks about the reality. No one's actually doing the work of explaining the reality. And the thing is, because we never stop to realize that particularly our modern life is entirely designed around basically not seeing these creatures because of how we live, they go unheard, unseen. And so the few people who do see them, well, you can't tell anybody. So they remain undiscovered.
Because you seem crazy.
Correct.
And it's amazing that you're talking, because for the longest time in my life, I've experienced paranormal things since I was, like six, 7 years old. And it was one of those things where, it's very taboo to talk about. If you talk about it, like we just said, you're crazy. You're crazy.
Yeah.
That's not happening. That didn't happen. You're crazy. It was a coincidence, something like that. But the truth of the matter is that it did happen. You're just not ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to switch back into more cryptids. This raises another question about another famous cryptid, flying winged creature. And I'm pretty sure you know where I'm going with this. The Mothman. It may be because of how it's depicted. I'm not necessarily saying that for sure it could be, a pterosaur. But, once again, interpretation is one thing. It's nighttime. It may be a slightly altered, and by saying that, I mean possibly, I don't want to say birth defect, let's say evolutionary decision down the line in the DNA somewhere. It could be a version of a pterosaur. And to my mind, it makes sense. But then again, I am not a learned man. So...
Well, so let me help you out here. Let me and give me 2 seconds on this one.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm gonna need more than 2 seconds on this one. I swear we're gonna come right back to your Mothman. I talk about in the book, and I mentioned this earlier. The Bigfoot is the all pun intended, the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
Of North Texas, urban mythology. It just yes. is. Right. There are accounts of Bigfoot going all. In fact, the illustration shows up on the back of the cover. But yeah, I mean, we've got accounts of Bigfoot going all the way back to Davy Crockett. Davy Crockett yeah. himself had an encounter. And that one's very controversial. But the thing is, like here in this area, they used to talk about the creature or the monster that would go up and down the creeks, right? Well, yeah. you have the Lake Worth Monster event in the early 60s. That renamed, well, because Jim Mars calls it the Goat Man, that renamed, it's such a big event because, TV was just a thing. You yeah. had literally dozens of people seeing this creature. So now every encounter becomes the Goat Man, right? Well, yeah. here's the thing. Now what happens is the name Goat Man sticks to everything else, right? Every paranormal event that happens, or maybe like, and I really go into the detail in this case in Cedar Hill because several historians actually did a great job of recording it. But, and I think this is what probably happened everywhere else. Wherever you have a Goatman legend, there was a Bigfoot encounter. So people said, hey, I saw the Goatman, right?
That makes sense.
And so then what happens is people say, okay, but then the urban, it's very obvious, a lot of the urban legends and very obvious urban legends get laid on top of it. And now you have this entirely different mythological Goatman. But then what everyone then does is they take the story of what happened at Lake Worth and they lay that on top of it.
So now you've got an entire hodgepodge of confusion that is yes. now dictating everyone's belief.
Correct. In areas that are particularly very paranormal.
Yeah, Goatman's Bridge is insanely haunted.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got a story of a creature that was seen less than half a mile from it that doesn't seem to be related to anything, but it's there. And
why
you're like,
am I not surprised?
When you're like, what's going on with this thing? Like, it is the weird, honestly. It's the weirdest story I put in the book. I have some other weird stories. I'm like, I can't even put this in the books. I don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's probably the weirdest story. Well, not the weirdest. I think the Lachusa is probably the weirdest story in the book. It's the most bizarre. But here's the thing. White Rock Lake. It's a goat man, whole nine yards. But then people actually see an actual goat man. They see a satyr looking creature, but it's clearly paranormal. But when that creature seems to be away from White Rock Lake, it yeah. seems to lose a lot of its goat humanness, but it becomes something more like a gray alien.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, but the problem is this name Goatman sticks to it. And the problem is a lot of us as researchers realize that Goatman and Bigfoot are often the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's the name that sticks. But the problem is you have all these other creatures that are like, whoa, that is not a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But I don't know what this thing is per se. It's clearly paranormal, but it's not Bigfoot. So what are we having here? So what does this mean to go for Mothman? Let's take it right back around. Here's the problem. Mothman is a popular, sexy name.
Yeah.
Now what you've got is everything people are seeing that's flying in that area becomes the Mothman.
Yeah.
So let's work with this. Yeah, I think that definitely there could have been a pterosaur in the area. I think the shot of the bridge, right?
Yeah.
Before it collapsed. I think it's very possible that is a pterodactyl. That having been said, or pterosaur, that having been said, there are creatures that are seen in the air that make no sense biologically.
100%. I agree.
I mean, people talk about gargoyles. They talk about giant. Yeah. Now, people talk about. So here's the thing, right? We got giant owls. We got gargoyles. We got pterotaurans. We've got pterosaurs. There is a point where I'm like, hold up.
Yeah.
I'm like, hold up. at some point, I gotta start asking questions here. Like, I do have a podcast that I co-host every Monday, and it's something that it's hacked off a lot of people, but I think we have to ask the question with, like, Bigfoot. I'm like, are we certain that everything we're seeing that we call Bigfoot is actually Bigfoot?
Mm.
Because if you were to remove the name from a lot of these sightings, you'd say, well, hold on, this fits very well with, like, the Fae, or elves, or demons, or any number, you know, or any number of things. It's like, maybe not everything we're, like, we're sort of going back saying, hey, maybe not every Bigfoot sighting is a Bigfoot sighting. Maybe there's something, maybe that's the big problem here. Well, the reason we can't get to anything is because we have all these disparate...
There's so much happening.
Yeah, and we're cramming them all into one box, and so the problem is now we can't see what's really going on. It's a Gordian knot. I think that the Mothman is the same thing. Maybe the Mothman is actually a name that's being attached to a bunch of different phenomena. And so it's like with the flying pterotorns. People are very consistent with their sightings of these things. They look like giant condors. There's, you know, white feathers around the neck, you know, whole nine yards. It's like, that seems very, very consistent. So I'm willing to say, okay, that's probably a thing. But I got to ask, how do we have a population of these things running around for so long and we don't see any feathers? Like, we don't find, like, no one's shown up with this massive feather, right?
That's an intriguing question.
Like, that's, for me, now again, I can explain some of that because I'm like, well, great. I grew up with a family of blue jays nested in the tree in my front yard, and I can think of maybe two or three, four or five feathers I found in like 20 years, right? So I'm like,
if you think about how birds function, obviously, like how feathers function, when their adult feathers come in, they don't really lose them.
Yeah,
they're there. It's just the way it is. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That obviously you're not going to find a ton of shed from a large prehistoric creature.
Yeah. But you think we'd still get one or two would show up when they die or something. So, I mean, that's a question I have, which leads me to the other question. They're not actually pterotorns. What if they are also pterodactyls or pterosaurs of some kind? Because it seems like we have very large pterosaurs and we have these smaller, the ones that what I saw that are only 8 to 10 foot wingspan. They seem to fly like crane, you know, and it's like that's how they stay hidden. But there does seem to be this other group of very large ones. What if the problem is they have that white marking around their neck, and the problem is people see it and they're like, it's a bird. So birds have feathers, and so now they remember feathers. Humans have terrible memories. We really do.
Yeah.
So the thing is, people can convince themselves of anything, particularly if they're in a highly emotionally charged situation. Right. Yes. So I'm not convinced that maybe what we don't have pterotorns and pterosaurs. Maybe we just have pterosaurs. But, you know, that being said, that still doesn't explain the freaking gargoyles people are seeing.
Not
right.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't explain, again, one of the stories I have in the book is a lechusa that attacks a woman. I mean, and for those who may not be aware, a lechusa is basically an owl the size of a human that has a woman's face. It's often thought to be obviously mystical. And there is a lot, and her family was very much connected to the occult at that time.
That sounds like shockingly Fae related.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. And one of the things I point out, the actual goat man around White Rock Lake is like, again, strip the modern name off of them. What do we have? What's a lechusa? Again, it's usually either a witch has turned in, you know, according to legend, a witch turns into the lechusa, or it is a demonic or a supernatural entity under control by a witch. And it's a giant owl bird with a woman's face. Great. You just described the harpies of Greek mythology. You just described the Lilitu or the Lilith of the Sumerians. It's the same thing.
It's freaking nuts. Hold on.
giant 7-foot-tall human with goat legs and horns? Will you just describe the fauns of Roman mythology? You describe the satyrs of Greek mythology? You describe the leshy of Indo-European mythology? You describe the shayadim from the Hebrew Bible? You've even got depictions of Enkidu from the Epic of Gilgamesh looking like this thing.
Wow. So
you gotta say, hold up. People see gargoyles all the time. I mean, actual gargoyles. Well, so what do you do with that? Do we just say they're all crazy, or do we say that maybe what's going on is that there are paranormal creatures running around? Well, okay, if you throw those in, now you got something going. Because now it's like, well, maybe what we have is Mothman. There is a paranormal entity, right? That is the Mothman. Maybe it's connected to the Lachusa. Maybe it's connected to some of these other things. But then you have pterosaurs. And then you have maybe some pterotorns. And maybe it's all getting put into one box. And that's our problem.
That's crazy.
It's the same thing. I would argue it's probably the same problem we have with Bigfoot. We've got paranormal critters running around. It may be and here's the worst part. One of these creatures are disguising themselves as Bigfoot.
I mean, it's 100%. I mean, you've got skinwalkers. You've got all kinds of shapeshifters, things like the Wendigo. These things that are known for changing shape and taking even human form. So why wouldn't they take the form of something that we know and are very familiar with?
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of my favorite to bring up, the Dog Man, the Beast of Bray Road.
Yeah.
What better way to terrorize people than to walk around as a large, two-legged, rabid edification of your house pet?
Oh, absolutely. When here's the thing. How often are you don't have to look very hard for people to describe demon, like people who have been possessed by demons. They'll talk about being chased by these hellhounds and these dogs.
Samael, like, all of those guys. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there was a musician years ago, like that was like he was literally institutionalized, because it's like you read it and you're like, as a Christian, you realize, hold on, that's demonic possession.
Oh,
you talk about being 100%. Chased by these dogs. There's a photograph I need to get my hands on, but there's a photograph of a guy who he was addicted to cocaine at the time. He was basically living a double life. He goes to a wedding with a friend, to a friend's wedding, and there's a photograph taken of him. And they get the picture back, and they're like, dude, something's wrong with this picture. And he gets the picture, and there's what looks like a snarling dog on his shoulder. Like the face. And it's like, it is there. Like, this isn't a double lay on top. It is a snarling dog. It's like the head is peeking over his shoulder, snarling at the camera. It freaked him out so much, he got rid of the cocaine. He became a Christian. I think he became an evangelist, even. Like, he was like, whoa, I'm out. So, yeah, we interviewed Vic Cundiff on our show a while back. That's one of the first things he talks about is, he's like, he thinks these things are paranormal.
Yeah.
And that they're actually feeding off of the trauma of people. Because if you stop looking at all these dogmen accounts, right? Why are these people surviving the account? There is zero reason.
Fear. Fear.
Exactly. Fear. To create the fear.
I mean,
predators, they'd have eaten you.
It's the number one food source of the demonic, and that is fear.
You're in trouble.
Fear.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's amazing that you were talking about musicians. I can't remember. I believe the guy's name was like Anthony something. Anthony Johnson, maybe? The guy that sold his soul at the crossroads to become an amazing blues player.
There's a lot of stories like that.
He showed up to play one night when he was like 18, and he was horrible. Everybody laughed him off, and then he came back like 6 months later and was one of the best blues players and singers that anybody had ever seen. And within a year and a half, he was dead. And they asked him, how did you get so good? And he said, I sold my soul to the devil at the crossroads. Now, it's a crazy story, but it's actually in a movie.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
The guy that shows up there is the embodiment of that musician. And then if you notice at the end of the movie, he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
But so
here's the thing, but that's the thing, that so that story is very it's universal.
It is.
Musicians
100%.
And there are even modern day musicians will talk about this stuff. I mean, let's face it, you don't have to look very hard for Lady Gaga and a lot of these other popular musicians today. They all have occultic symbology behind them. They all talk about being involved in the occult. I always forget his name. I'm really terrible with names. The Beatle. John
Ringo?
No. The first one to die. John.
Oh, you're talking about George Harrison.
Not George Harrison.
John Lennon.
No. John Lennon. Thank you. Yeah. So he was shot.
Yeah.
He talks about the man in the flaming pie story where he.
Yes.
So I heard an interview with a friend of his, and they said, and they asked him about that. He goes, "Well, like, so did your best friend sell his soul to the devil?" He goes, "Well, let me tell you something about London." I'm like, that got me stopped. I'm like, whoa. If anyone had asked me straight up, did your best friend sell his soul to the devil? And I knew that to be full of crap. I don't care how many times you ask me a question, I'm going to be like, I'm like, yeah, it's a story he told. It's funny. People are taking it out of context, whatever. My first response is not going to be, let me tell you something about London. And then he proceeds to tell this really creepy story about essentially the devil showing up amongst a bunch of people. I mean, it's like, that seems to be an odd response. So my point, the broader point here being, a lot of these creatures do seem to be clearly paranormal. I have an account, I call it a chupacabra. It's only because the witness refers to it as a chupacabra because of what it. I don't think it's a chupacabra at all, but it's clearly a paranormal creature. At some points, people look at it, it seemingly has a very gray alien look to it. It does seem to have some connections to that creature I mentioned earlier that was seen around old Denton Road old Alton Bridge in Denton. And some similarities to the creatures that are seen in around the White Rock Lake that are maybe a little bit removed from White Rock Lake. You get closer to White Rock Lake, it very much looks like a satyr. Again, horns, the whole nine yards. But you get a little further away, it seems to lose some of those flamboyant affectations. So there are clearly paranormal creatures. They're here in Dallas. They're everywhere. And I now, while there is clearly a physical Bigfoot presence in around the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it was in the 60s, they still up to this day, and their locations make sense. I think they're probably migratory. That being said, I can't help but notice that there's an awful lot of sightings of Bigfoot. Some of them are, and they seem, and it's like there's honestly too many. Give me just a second to explain that. While I would argue that the average Bigfoot's probably only slightly over 6 foot tall, between 6 and 7 feet. I think probably a bull male, you're probably looking about 8 feet. Now, you want to go up to the Pacific Northwest and say they get taller than that, I'm all for it. But you start talking about 12 foot, 14 foot, I got a question about that. And here's the other problem. You're still dealing with a predator, an apex predator. Let's say you got a population 6-7 feet tall, 500 pounds. That's still a lot of food to eat.
It is.
These things are going to absolutely decimate the chlorican. Now, again, in around cities, I think you got dumpster diving. I think this is why we see them always targeting pigs and deer. It's all protein. They are packing in, they're packing in that keto life, right? But that having been said, these things would, if you have a large population of these things, they would completely destroy the ecosystem.
100%. 100%.
Think about bears. Like, grizzly bears, they're eating all the time because they're hibernating. But black bears in the South, they don't hibernate. And yet people see them all the time. Why? Because there's a bunch of them running around. Even for as low a population as they have, people see them because they have to eat all the time.
right outside of my job. Right outside of my job, we have a number of black bears. Literally, you can, you know, once, twice a week, look out the window, and there's one walking across the parking lot. Like, it's just a thing. And you don't have to live out in the middle of nowhere like I do. I literally used to live in the middle of a city in Virginia, and you would see one walking down the street in my neighborhood.
Yeah, because they don't care.
Now, no.
Let's assume for a second physical Bigfoot is just doesn't want to be seen by humans. Okay, that makes perfect sense to me, right? They're trying to they're actively trying to avoid humans. Great. Even the ones that live around humans and figure out how to sort of stay out of sight, all for it. But you can't have as many accounts as people have of seeing them and not have a completely destroyed ecosystem for predators to be that big. Now, what I think is a much better explanation is, yes, there is a physical Bigfoot. They leave physical tracks. I'm certain that they're running around out there. But that there are also paranormal creatures that are that maybe want us to think that they're Bigfoot because it is something that's attractive to us.
Yep.
And here's the question. This is a question I'm really wrestling with. What does it mean to worship something?
Valid.
Because...
valid point.
Where is the line between attention and worship? That is a question I'm really wrestling with, because what do we do?
Well,
what do we do with these creatures?
I would say that the question is even, what is the line between attention and obsession? Because obsession is where the worship becomes. Because I heard a message from my pastor from when I was younger. And it's a message that has stuck with me and has stood the test of time. I was 13 years old, and I'm 32 now, and it's still with me fresh. How do you spell love? How do you spell it? Is it L-O-V-E? No. It's T-I-M-E. What do you spend your time on?
Yes.
Time is obsession. If you are obsessing over this creature, then 100% that is your worship, because that's what you love. Where do you put your love? And I can completely agree with you there, because that makes so much sense. Okay, sorry. I'm having a mind blow moment. Okay, I'm having another one. But one thing that we've kind of been alluding to and talking about and mentioning this whole time is misinterpretation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember. Or have heard of Robert Wadlow.
He
was the world's tallest man at 7'11". Mm-hmm. Now, there is a picture of him next to a guy that is 6 foot tall, and he makes him look like a child.
Oh,
now,
he does.
8 foot tall, 500 pounds, could be misinterpreted as 10, 11, 12 foot tall because of the size difference.
I completely agree. If you go to the Christian Evidence Museum in Glenrose, Texas, they have one of Robert Wadlow's suits.
Yes.
It is massive. And I keep thinking about this. I'm like,
18 and a half foot shoe.
Yeah. It's nuts. Like, you realize how big that is, and you scale it up. And it's like, again, look at Shaquille O'Neal next to just about anybody.
Yeah.
He's one of, because here's the thing, like, the problem is when most humans get that tall, what's happening is it's a glandular issue with the pituitary gland. And so you grow, essentially you get really, really long. You don't really grow proportionally. But you look at Shaquille O'Neal, he's grown proportionally because he's actually supposed to be that tall.
Yes.
Well, now put another foot on him.
Yeah.
That's a monster. And here's the other thing. It's also a non-human, let me be very specific when I say this. A non-traditional modern human form on it.
Correct.
Proportion. I asked this question in the book, and I mean this very legitimately. The human population, as we know it, basically has less diversity than a litter of puppies. We get caught up in things like skin color, hair morphology. But guess what? In a litter of puppies, you can have a dog that's all white, you can have a dog that's all black, you can have a dog that's black and brown. You're like, where'd that come from?
Exactly.
But it's very difficult to look at our skeletons and know which population somebody comes from, right? Because proportionally, we all seem to have the same. You know, yeah, we have pygmies, you know, people who are smaller.
Yeah.
You have some populations that are larger, but if you were to look, a human skeleton is a human skeleton.
It yeah, just exactly. Is.
But if you were to look at, say, dogs, right? Now, again, yeah. We've bred them this way, but stop to think about what that means. A Chihuahua and a British Bulldog and a Whippet are all the same animal. They're not even considered different.
Nothing alike. And
not just their outer, their exterior colors or fur morphology, their bone morphology is radically different.
Oh, yeah.
Proportions are just radically different. You would never, if you were to look at their skeletons, you'd never assume they were the same species, much less the exact same thing, just different breeds of that thing.
Yeah.
My point is, what if Bigfoot is just human? It's just human in a way that that we're not. Right, it's just its morphology is different. Because again, let's ask the question about the Neanderthal, right? Neanderthal okay. morphology is very, very different, skeletal wise, from modern Homo sapien, right?
Yes.
Great, but we have Neanderthal DNA, right?
Yeah.
Did they use tools?
Yes.
Did they make art?
Yes.
Did they have burials that clearly show some form of belief in the afterlife and
yes.
leading 100%. Dolls? And, okay, great. So ritualized burial, they made tools, they made artwork, they bred with humans. Why don't we consider them human?
They are human.
Thank you. So here's the question. How do we know Bigfoot's not a human?
Okay, so can I okay, because now you're speaking my language.
Yep.
Okay. So when we look, let's go biblical with it. Are you ready, kids? Here we go. So we look at Esau.
Yep.
What was Esau? What does Esau mean? It means hairy man. The yeah. dude was covered in a brownish orange hair. And mm-hmm. then he split from the family and went and did his own thing. Now, let's take a look at where Esau and his family were located at the time. All right. So now we look at where the Australopithecus was found, which was biblically and historically about the size that Esau would have been at the time, because people were smaller back then.
Yep.
Who's to say that that is not a family member of Esau? And who's to say that over the years and the generations, as humans have grown larger, that the family of Esau that was covered with hair may still be covered with hair and also grew larger?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and here's the thing. It doesn't even have to be necessarily Esau himself.
No.
We just... What if these are just humans who figured out after Babel, right? After the Babel event.
Yeah.
You know what? People suck.
100%. Thank you.
And just like, you know what? Y'all are crazy. We're going to go just live off the land. We're just going to be one with nature. We're going to be one with God. But we're leaving y'all alone because y'all are nuts.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm not saying that is what happened, but it's a possibility we have to entertain.
It's a valid theory.
Yeah. Well, again, if they're just different enough from us that they would have been ostracized anyway, maybe they're like, you know what? Guys, these don't just leave these people alone. Like, these are just not people we want to be with. Let's just go. Now, is that exactly what they are? I don't know. Could they just be giant apes, bipedal apes? I think there's, you know, like Gigantopithecus. I think that's possible.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? And I think we see them again. You got to look carefully throughout history, but we do see them show up. I won't say his name publicly because I don't know if he's stated his thought on this publicly, but in the book of Job, it talks about the sons of fools.
Yes.
They live in dry riverbeds. They eat mountain, right? They bray like donkeys.
Yes.
There is a very popular and very prominent creationist who will tell you he thinks that's a Bigfoot population.
It's a valid theory again.
And again, I would point to forget the Epic of Gilgamesh for a second. Beowulf.
Mm.
I think Grendel and Grendel's mother are descriptions of Bigfoot.
Dude, yes. Okay.
But let's say this into the broader European mythology. We have trolls, which are smaller. They live in they live underneath bridges, right? But they're smaller, they're hairier. They are often depicted as with having larger noses, smaller ears, right?
But you know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like the rock apes from the Philippines.
Well, hold on. Give me 2 seconds on this one.
Okay.
Because they also speak, right? The trolls can speak.
Okay.
Neanderthal, right?
Dude, yes. Yes. Okay.
That sounds like a Neanderthal. Then you have the ogres. What are ogres? Ogres are very, very tall. They're very powerful. They're often depicted as having large canines. Well, we also have stories of the wild man, things like that's a Bigfoot. Now, I think that the quote unquote Bigfoot, you know, it's a whole population. They do seem to be everywhere, right? Like you said, you have the rock apes. Those seem to be. That's why I'm okay with Bigfoot being an ape. I really am. In fact, it would make my life feel so much easier if they're just giant apes. Because their behavior makes sense. They don't want to be around humans, right? They do threat displays. They throw things. Like, their behavior makes sense. But again, yeah. I think it's a small population. Then you throw in the fact that you got some paranormal things running around. That makes me feel not necessarily happier, but that's a model that seems to work with what we actually see. Because what I meant earlier, one of the things I talk about in the book is, as I sort of extrapolate the mythological impact of the Lake Worth monster on Dallas lore, right? That's one of the things I do is I show how I was able to sort of separate some things out and say, like, hey, hold up, this doesn't seem right. Like, why am I seeing the exact same language with all of these different goat men? Like, it's the exact same thing, right?
Yeah.
So as researchers, one of the things we need to do is start looking through lore and say, okay, hold up. There's what people say happens in the scene. Yeah. Then there's what people actually say that they are actually have seen. And I noted very quickly, and I think this is the question we need to ask. There's a difference between what people say is seen and what people actually see. And what I mean by that is, it's the difference between the mythology and the actual eyewitness accounts. Do the eyewitness accounts actually tell you these things occur? No. In fact, what you'll often see is there's a difference between the eyewitness account and the lore. Well, why? Well, because the lore is oftentimes impacted by traditional urban legends. Like, let's go back to Denton, you know, the old Alton Bridge in Denton, right? That story, and I count, there's actually three different stories. People don't realize that. There's actually three different stories about it. But it's just the Hangman's Bridge.
Yeah.
You can find any iron truss bridge in the South. In fact, most bridges in America, but in the South, yeah. You will find the Hangman's Bridge story. You will find a story about a ghost or whatever that you need. If you knock on the bridge three times, you honk at the bridge three times, you say the thing's name three times, and the ghost appears. That is every bridge, period. The Hangman's Bridge is every iron truss bridge in the South. Like, that's just, it is urban legend fair. But the thing is, again, that's what people say, but then you see, well, what do people actually see when they get out there? Well, the actual eyewitnesses who come back and they give us the reports, it's clearly all paranormal. They don't see headless men, they just see specters, they have Ouija boards out there, they get assaulted, they have EVPs. It's paranormal, but no one has ever actually gone on record and say, I saw this thing that counts with the mythos, right? I think we have to do the same thing with Bigfoot.
Mm.
There's what people say about the Bigfoot that's seen in a particular area, right? But then we have to look at what do the eyewitnesses actually convey? What are they telling you? And we need to start going back to scratch on a lot of these things, because there's mythological Bigfoot, there's physical Bigfoot. I think there's paranormal Bigfoot. I just don't think it's actually Bigfoot. I think it's something else entirely.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that's sort of the problem is in the community we're fighting. And by the way, guys, if you're into Bigfoot and you believe in the woo stuff, can you do me a favor? Come together as a group and please come up with a different name. Because woo is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Can we all just agree to come up with a different title for that? Because I feel like in any time I have to say woo, it's like there are certain words I absolutely just cannot stand when I hear adult men say. Actually, adults of any kind, forget. Like, I'll give some leeway to women saying this, but if you're in a, if you're over the age of 8 and I hear the word yummy coming out of your mouth, you have lost all respect for me. That is the, I'm like, you're a freaking adult. If you're over 8 years old, you don't get to use the word yummy. That is stupid.
I just want to point out,
all these things, like,
ironically, I use it ironically to upset people.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. If it's intended to cheese somebody off, I'm all for it, right? I'm cool. But if I hear you honestly and unironically using the word yummy, I'm out. I'm like, nope, I'm done. I can't. It's just, it rubs me the wrong way. Woo is the same thing. You're like, well, let's get to the woo. No, 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 no. Woo is something Ric Flair can say. Because he's Ric Flair.
And only Ric Flair. And his dog does not have to pass by blow.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just please, can we all get together and come up with, I don't care what else you call it, just don't call it yummy. I think we'll be okay. Just come up with something that's a little bit more. But let's, so the woo stuff, the paranormal Bigfoot, let's just put that off. Because I have spoken with people who are very credible, and they'll talk to you about mind speak. And I'm like, okay, here's the problem. I got a problem here. They're telling me, they're communicating with these people, with these creatures, telepathically. They are credible people. These are not crazy people. They're not. And let me be very precise here. People who are genuinely crazy don't live an unmedicated life as organized as some of these people do. Like there's people who have, mental, some issues. Okay, fine. But I'm sorry. Mental health, and this is not meant in any form of derogatory way. If your mental health is declining, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
The kind of mental illness you would have to mind speak with something that isn't really there is going to show up in other ways.
Yeah.
It just is. I can't have credible people have, give me these stories of mind speak, and it's like, but they're off living credible lives. It's like, there's one guy several people who I know who are in constant contact with them. And then I have other people who are, again, they've claimed to have had a singular encounter with mind speak. And I'm like, you're off living. It's like, those are the ones I'm like, you're off living your life, doing normal things.
Yeah.
You're not like running around talking to other things all the time. It's just, this was a one time
thing. It's a one off. Yeah.
I got to take that credibly. And these other people who are talking to him all the time, I'm like, I got to take you credibly too, because you're out, you own a business, you're making money, you're doing normal things. There's no other sign.
Your life is not playing video games in grandma's basement for 40 hours a week. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, you are a very credible person. You have a family. You have a business. Like, you like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then I asked the question. But so then, is the problem here that we're just using the word Bigfoot? I think if we just stop and say, okay, hold up. Bigfoot is exclusively reserved for physical creatures that look like apes, that look like upright apes, that live in North America. If we want to say Bigfoot, Bigfoot-like, that's fine. I'm cool with that. Until we know what a thing is, it just has to have some sort of working title.
Yeah.
But if it's mind-speaking, if it's moving through walls, if it's getting off of UFOs, maybe we need to use a different title for those.
Yeah.
Because now, it may turn out that what we think of as the physical Bigfoot are those things. That may be the case.
Yeah.
Because we don't have evidence either way. People are like, well, we know for a fact that can't. I'm like, you don't know jack crap. First of all, I got plenty of accounts in this book of clearly, obviously, undeniably paranormal entities having physical effect on the world around them. Right?
Yeah.
So, if you want to tell me that Bigfoot's, that your working theory is that Bigfoot is an ape or a human or a Nephilim hybrid, fine. I'm all for it. And they're purely physical creatures. They're off doing their thing. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But don't tell me that it's impossible that they can't be this paranormal thing too, simply because they have physical effect on the world. Well, guess what? They throw rocks at you and that makes them physical. Ghosts can throw rocks.
Demons can throw furniture.
Demons can throw furniture. Like, It's like, please understand, like, hold on. Until we actually have a corpus delicti, right? Yep. We don't know that these things are actually purely physical creatures. Now, am I over here telling you that that Patterson Gimlin caught some interdimensional, hyper-intelligent... No, I don't know any of that. What I know is people see very large, bipedal...
Ape-like creatures.
Because I don't even want to say apes, because that means what we know they are. We don't know that. Well, large, bipedal, hairy hominids. People see them. We see tracks.
Yes.
We can catalog the tracks. There seems to be similar morphology in the tracks that allow us to know when things are faked and when things are real. There is consistency in behavior of what people actually see and actually encounter. Great. I'm happy to believe that's real. And they're just some things living out there being what they are.
Yeah.
That being said, we also have other accounts and other stories of weird stuff. Like, again, let's get rid of all the stories that people say have been seen, and let's just look at what the actual people said. I had this encounter happen. Right? Yes. Even if it's like you're going to hide your name because you don't want the embarrassment of it, I'm going to take that seriously. But let's look at what the actual accounts say. We have people saying that they can talk to them, that they move through walls, that they're getting on and off UFOs. Okay, I can't say that those accounts don't occur. The problem is there is the people who are dedicated to just the physical ones, like, I don't even want to address those. I don't think they're real. Well, that's not science.
No.
Because
You have to look at everything.
If you're going to tell me that you're only going to take these accounts because they fit your worldview, you're not doing science. You have to explain to me why I'm getting these other stories. And they're just as consistent. They're saying the same thing. They're just as unrelated. You know, the eyewitnesses are just as unrelated to people. And by the way, these accounts didn't just start after a movie. They didn't just start in the last 20 years. They've been around the entire time. Exactly. And the original eyewitnesses, the American, the indigenous cultures that were here, they have the same stories of these supernatural Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So I go back to, we have one of two possibilities. There are physical Bigfoot and there are paranormal Bigfoot. The paranormal Bigfoot isn't actually a Bigfoot. It's a paranormal entity that we are somehow, and for some reason, mistaking for Bigfoot. Maybe they hide this way. Maybe they just happen to look the same, or maybe we're perceiving them that way. Whatever it is, there is a paranormal entity and there's a physical entity, and they are two separate things, and we're just putting everything in the same box, and we gotta unpack it.
Yeah.
Or the paranormal is the only one, and that they're all paranormal.
Yeah.
Those are the only two possible. Or it's all, everyone is hallucinating, and somehow we're all misinterpreting these. It's mass hysteria, and Patterson Gimlin faked it with technology that wasn't available at the time, and somehow they're exactly. Exactly. And somehow there's a group of people running around creating perfect tracks that are fooling even forensic experts who work for the police department. Like,
yeah.
Okay. I don't buy that because there's too many on top of each other.
There's just too much. Yeah.
So, like I said, okay, the hoax and the mass hallucination, that doesn't work. Let's throw that one out. But it still only leaves you with one of two options. The problem is we have this argument in the field where we get these guys don't want to deal with this, and these guys want to be dominant.
Yep.
And I'm saying maybe
they believe that they are the hierarchy yeah. of everything. They're above, and you know the whole thing. It's the whole thing is a scatter graph. You can't just look at the average. You have to look at the finer points, the outliers, because they exist for a reason. You still have to look at them.
Yep.
But we, as much as I want to go on, we do have to wrap this up, sadly. But I think everything that we have covered here all comes down to two things, and that is misidentification and misinterpretation.
Yeah.
And it's like anything else. Do the research. Research takes time. Do the research. But with that being said, Jason, go ahead and give us all of your social media platforms. Give us everything that you have going on. I know you were talking about another book potentially. Go ahead and give us the name of your current and potentially what you're going to talk about in your next one.
Okay, so first things first, new book, Metroplex Monsters, Dallas Demons, Fort Worth Goatmen, and Other Terrors of the Trinity River is available at Amazon.com. It's available on BarnesNoble.com. You can order them. They're all in stock. They also have there's an ebook version as well. So that's easy. Again, Metroplex Monsters, that should pull up on your first search. If you would like an autographed copy for $25, I'll be happy to send one to you as long as you live in the continental U.S. Just send me an email to sirupapers@yahoo.com. That's sirupapers@yahoo.com. Just send me an email and I'll message you back. As far as getting a hold of me or through social media, right now, it's easier to get a hold of me through Trinity Paracryptid Research. Every Monday, we do I'm a co-host on a podcast called Texas Front Porch, where we have these interesting conversations. In fact, I'd love to have you on if you ever get a chance.
Oh, absolutely.
Tex won't mind. Basically, I just tell him we're having a guest and he's like, okay. but yeah, no, it's Texas Front Porch is the name of the show, but the name of the channel is Trinity Paracryptid Research. Facebook is the same thing, Trinity Paracryptid Research. And eventually we'll have some other shows on that channel, but right now that's the channel. Right now, for now, that's the easiest way to sort of get in touch with me. I do have a website. I need to play with it more, though. I'll probably do a re-announcement of that later. As far as the next book, I'm still playing with it. I don't know. I have done other books. I think the next one may be a sequel to a smaller book I wrote. Called How UFOs and Bigfoot Prove the Bible is True. So right now I'm playing with doing a sequel to that one, but right now you can, if you go into Amazon, type in my name. Unfortunately, there's some other people that have my name. and somehow Amazon has a book on there. I still can't get it off that it has nothing to do with me, and it looks really weird. But the books I've written, the ones I'm happiest with, although I'm not really happy with any of them, because I'm my own worst critic, is, again, How UFOs and Bigfoot Prove the Bible is True. Lucifer is Not Satan, the symbol of the Antichrist.
Intriguing.
We have also the 2017 and Beyond Tetralogy, which is me sort of putting all four of the 2017 and Beyond books together. I'm one of the few authors that wrote about the 2017 alignment that was real popular a few years ago, but said it is not about the rapture. The rapture will not occur in September of 2017. That rather, it is simply part of a signpost that was described in the Book of Revelation, chapter 12, and that it actually doesn't end until 2027. I'm one of the few people who said, yep, it is. This is what it is, but has nothing to do with rapture, guys. Please stop making stuff up. And of course, no one jumped on that one. Like all the prophecy shows want to either say it's absolutely nothing, or they wanted some guy screaming it's the rapture is happening now. Sell me all your property. I was the guy over there saying no. Here's the evidence. Here's the math for it being Revelation 12. But yeah, don't worry. It has nothing to do with the rapture.
Awesome. So, guys, go on to Amazon. Check out those books. Jason, man, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You blew my mind like 3 or 4 times. And
it's just a first date.
It is just a first date. We're definitely going to have you back. For sure. For sure. With that being said, guys, you guys can find me on all of these major platforms. Leave a like, leave a comment, leave a review, subscribe, all of this good stuff. It helps the show get found, so we can do this thing long term. Also, for those of you who are out there that don't know yet, I just dropped merch. go check it out. You can find it on the Instagram and on the Facebook page at Sparks of the Paranormal. And with that being said, guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. For Jason McClain, I am John Sparks, and we will talk to you next time on Sparks of the Paranormal.